Hi, my name is Michael Creamer, and welcome to a podcast focused on the world of corporate real estate and everything that touches it. Today, I'm talking to Ibrahim Ibrahim, who's the MD of Portland Design Associates. And before we kick off, I just want to read a short bio on him because it's pretty fascinating. Ibrahim graduated with a degree in aeronautical engineering and a master's degree in industrial design from the Royal College of Art and Imperial College London. He's a fellow of the Royal Society of Arts, a board member of the UK government's High Street Task Force, and an advisory board member of the Centre for London Think Tank. Ibrahim, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I also am joined by Nicola Gillen, a partner at Cushman & Wakefield, who runs the Total Workplace team across EMEA, and has been doing a huge amount of work in around experience per square foot and getting people back to the office. So, Ibrahim, if I can start with you, what we wanted to talk about was your retail background in a way, and this concept of retail experience. So maybe you could kick off and give us a sort of introduction to that retail experience world, so that we can then start talking about how we think that applies to this new way of working that we're going to be experiencing as we go back to a physical office to some degree or other.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the kind introduction as well. It's a pleasure to be here. Well, you know, all research is pointing to the fact that people are wanting to buy less and less stuff and spend their money on experiences. So what we call dematerialized shopping. And if you think about retail, retail has always been and will always be about four things: recruitment, transaction, fulfillment, and retention. What's interesting is that the transaction and fulfillment piece is gradually migrating away from the physical space onto online platforms. So what we are therefore left with in the physical space is recruitment and retention. In other words, retailers and brands will increasingly use the physical space, the store, as it used to be called, for recruiting customers to drive them either to their online platforms, online e-commerce sites, or social platforms. So if you're going to use a physical space as a brand for recruiting customers, that has got to be experience driven. It's no longer about shelves and rails of products. It's about creating experiences that people want to share. People want to be part of a community. They want to be social. And these experiences are increasingly ephemeral and therefore will impact everything that the physical space has to offer. It will impact the service proposition. It will impact the design. It will impact the master plan, the technology. And very importantly, it'll impact the physical real estate. When you're designing a store or a physical space that's ephemeral and programmable and behaves more like a stage set, it becomes a very different animal. And the million-dollar question is, in any given asset, in any given shopping centre or high street, what proportion of the space will be for transaction and fulfilment? Because there will still be traditional shops. And what proportion will be for recruitment, these stage sets, these programmable experiences? That's the million-dollar question. Of course, it all depends on the asset, but that's what's going to impact a changing approach to master planning.
Interesting. And I think there's a lot there that we can maybe unpack a little bit. And maybe you can just talk more about the type of experience that people are looking for when they maybe go to a shopping centre or a high street. Because then I want to come back to Nicola and maybe see if we think there's parallels in the office world. So maybe you could just talk about that in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, I can. And it starts with marketing and the new approach to consumerism. And it starts from a shift from what used to be the dumb thing, which is demographic segmentation, segmenting your market through demographics. Well, that's no longer as relevant. The future is about interest-based segmentation because demographics are blurring. And therefore, to answer your question, what type of experiences? More and more experiences, more and more retail offers will be based around in interest groups, people who have a passion for an activity, a brand, whether it's yoga, whether it's running, whether it's watches or whatever. So more and more stores will be based around people's interest and their thirst for learning more around that interest, so the connoisseurship piece, their thirst for increasing analog experiences as a response to digitization, so creating social experiences, gathering, You can see what IKEA are doing around their dinner clubs. You can see what Lululemon are doing, what Rafa are doing, what Burberry are doing at the other end of the scale, and Apple. So these shops, as they used to be called, are becoming, if you like, community centres. But that community is a community of interest. And I think what's going to happen, again, to answer your question about experience, I think we're going to end up with, or we're going to progress to, three types of retail typology, retail physical space. I'm trying to not call them stores, the physical space typology. And the first one will be the traditional transaction and fulfillment. The second one will be about recruitment, as I mentioned, these brand spaces that are places that are experience driven, are platforms for a media brand, if you like, a brand that acts, behaves like a media platform. So it recruits customers through ephemeral experiences. And the third is, as I just described, community. It's a store that drives and attracts a community of people that blurs the boundaries of demographics. The common denominator of the customers is this passion for a particular area of interest. When I describe the three retail typologies, one thing I forgot to mention is that each one has a different rent model and revenue model. That's the key. And that's why we've got to develop the real estate world, the agency world, have got to develop new revenue lease models, an ecosystem of lease models. So when you're dealing with a transaction and fulfillment space, to when you're dealing with a media platform, to when you're dealing with a community space, there are very, very different types of revenue and different ways for the brand to make money. In the transactional platform, you know, you have normal fixed rent plus turnover, maybe. In the media platform, you have a data-based rent based on the data that demonstrates the value of that space to media. And in the community space, maybe you have a subscription model, you have a footfall model, plus a fixed rent component. These are all up for conversation and discussion, but that is the new paradigm. The days of fixed 5-year leases, 10-year leases are over. And the days where the real estate industry think that turnover rent is something new are over as well. We've been doing it in airports for years. And the real estate industry seems to think that's a new idea. Well, it isn't.
No, and I would agree with you. I did a lot of retail work in the late 80s, early and through the 90s when I was living in New York, and I worked in shopping centers, and we had turnover rents then. It's been very common in the US for a long period of time. Started with restaurants, I believe, but then went into the, you know, more traditional clothing and shoes retailers, because the mall owners wanted to know who was trading the best so they can move them around the mall. And also like to keep them on short leases so they could refresh the mall all the time. So I think that model has existed, maybe not in the UK, but overseas for a while. And maybe people are just realizing it has benefits here as well. Interesting. So there's a ton in what you say, and I want to come back to some of it and maybe bounce back and forward a little bit between retail and office. So Nicola, if we take some of those thoughts and some of the work that you've been doing, maybe you could start by explaining, with the experience per square foot data, what it is that we think the office, physical office, needs to be focused on as a starting point. And does it relate to this idea of having an experience?
Yes, of course. So with experience per square foot, the first round of data was taken last summer, and the survey stayed open, and we're in the process of gathering the second round now. And I think the shift between the first and the second is particularly interesting in terms of data sets. In the first set, we saw that only 50% of those respondees, 64,000 people across 100 countries, only 50% said they felt connected to company culture. And this was when we were all almost entirely remote. And that's probably, of all the stats, the most alarming when we present that to senior business leaders, because obviously that speaks volumes in terms of engagement and recruitment. And it is interesting to hear Ibrahim use language that is very commonly used in terms of workplace around, obviously, attraction, recruitment, retention, and indeed fulfillment. So culture has been a problem for the whole of this pandemic. What we've seen emerge as a more significant problem now, or at least as significant, is learning. And I would say learning particularly for younger generations, learning and social connection. So I think the role of the office as we're seeing it, as it's always been, but increasingly now, is about engagement. It's about loyalty and engagement on the first point. And secondly, it's about creating, exactly as Ibrahim describes, a sense of allure or excitement, a community of like-minded people who come together because they share a common interest. And this then connects, I think, very well to corporate brands, and some of them becoming more fashionable and desirable and others becoming less so. So employees wanting to work for companies that do good and wanting to be associated with companies that have a real purpose in the world. So I think increasingly we are not going to see people coming back to offices to sit in, you know, boring vanilla open plan spaces. They will want to come in to be inspired and to connect with and to learn with other colleagues. And I think also the demographic point is very, very interesting. It can be a very blunt tool. And we've certainly seen younger generations suffering more during this period for various reasons, like lack of appropriate places to work. But we have for some time been talking about actually the youngest and oldest have a lot in common with each other. You know, they have more time, they have more disposable income. And I think thinking in terms of communities of people and blurring those boundaries is a much more realistic way to look at the needs of the office going forward.
One of the things you said, which ties back to Ibrahim, something you mentioned, which was the stage set, and we didn't get into that. So I'd like to pick up on that, because I've heard various people say, you know, we need to be able to build offices in a way that you can, they have multiple uses. It's easy to move things around depending why people have come to the office, rather than it be these rows and rows of what I would refer to as industrial desks, where we all sit in a nice row with a phone and a computer and do the work. Now that's going to be at home, to Nicola's point. Can you just maybe talk a little bit about what you meant when you said stage set? Is it, am I on the right lines describing it that way?
By stage set, what I was referring to was the kind of polar opposite of what a shop generally historically has been, like a fixed piece of architecture of shelves and rails and counters and totally immovable. And it's refurbished every 7 years or every 5 years. What I'm saying is that a shop now is much more like a programmed stage of curated experiences that change on a daily, on a weekly basis, which of course has a massive impact in how you design a store and more importantly, how much it costs to fit out and how often you fit it out. So, and digital interfaces, of course, and environments will play a big part of that. So really what we're saying is that why stage set? Because retail is no longer about real estate. Retail is about content. Real estate is a byproduct of that. And I would take that idea one step further and say that residential property is no longer about real estate, no longer about buildings, it's about community. And office is no longer about real estate, it's about culture. The real estate and how you lease it and how you facilitate, manage it is all a byproduct of content, community and culture in the three areas.
Right. And if we pick up on the idea of community, Nicola, because again, this is something that I keep on, I've heard more in the last 6 months than I've heard probably in the last five. This idea that people want, when they go to the office or a physical office, they want to be part of a community. And building owners need to think beyond the walls of the building, and the occupiers of the space want to be in a part of a town or a city, wherever they are, that allows them to, you know, the public to permeate into the office space, the workers to permeate into the surrounding area. Now, of course, that's been going on for a while, but something seems to have shifted in the way people think about being part of a community. Can you comment on that?
Sure. Yeah. And I think it goes back to the points we've both made earlier about a sense of purpose and organizations and staff, organizations needing a much stronger purpose statement than they ever have before, and employees you know, part of their decision making in terms of joining organizations is about joining organizations with purpose that aligns to their own values. And increasingly, you know, corporates are being held up to take more responsibility for their footprint and for the impact they have on the world. And obviously, from a real estate point of view, that's very tangible. So the amount of office buildings that are now looking towards very open ground floors, which are accessible and open to the public, where they can walk in and get coffee and sit down, etc. And long gone are the days of, you know, setting up barriers and security that people needed to go through. And I think another important point here is around, Ibrahim just mentioned curated experiences being the future of, you know, retail environments. And I would argue that it's the same for offices. We did a research paper with the George Washington University, and there's a very interesting data point in there which says that if people are working typically 2 days a week remotely, the chance of them bumping into each other, this is two people from the same team, is only about 29% if it isn't managed. So ironically, with increased flexibility and virtual working, is going to need to come more structure and a more curated experience, so that when people are in, they're sure that they're going to meet the people that it is of value for them to meet.
Yeah. So Nicola, this idea of curating the experience that's between people within teams, as you said, and also obviously between teams who need to work together in a physical space. How's that going to be handled, do you think? Is that partly about design of space, and is it mostly about technology allowing people to choose when they come into the office and making sure they're sitting near the people they need to be with?
I think it's both about technology and physical design, but the starting point is about the brand itself, the brand and culture of the organization. So really, coming together physically needs to be about an immersive brand experience. People need to go away from that experience recharged, pumped up with new ideas, having met different people that they haven't seen in person for a while, leaving office buildings with energy and inspiration, a little bit like, you know, the sort of high that you can get sometimes from a great retail experience or any kind of experience. So the office is going to need to work with technology and design, but also the behavior side of things, so that the experience in the office is memorable and connected to the purpose of the organization. So it is that immersive brand experience that people come away with. And this will be particularly acute for new starters. Another, you know, point of data that we've had over the last year now almost is things worked very well for the first 6 months because everybody knew each other and everybody knew what they were doing. But as time goes on, we have more churn in organizations and we have new people joining who haven't had that immersive experience within a team and within an organization. So the role of the office is going to be very important in managing that.
Yeah. And Ibrahim, I know at the beginning I read out your bio and described you as a retail specialist, but I know from our conversations, you know, you're much more than that, obviously. And can you maybe describe, are you working in the office space and taking some of these retail concepts and thoughts and ideas into the office space? Is there a big parallel there for you in the work that you do?
Yes, and this is the most fascinating thing and how it's impacted our business. And yes, we're working both in the office space and also in the residential space. And the reason our clients have come to us is not so much that we design retail assets, whether it's shopping centers or shops or urban regeneration to do with retail. It's to do with the process. And our process, you know, is driven not by interior design or architecture, it's driven by culture. Understanding the cultural trends that drive behavior and understanding within that, how do you segment your audience and how do you then define the missions and the journeys of those audiences to do with your experience, your asset, and how do you map those experiences and those missions across the asset in terms of an experience master plan, and how then do you design the experience? Well, if you take those steps, and an important part of that step is how do you craft the story? What is the story of the place, the essence of the experience, as Nicola refers to, the brand itself, what is the essence of that brand, crafting that story and then translating it into the experience design. All that process can be applied and should be applied to office design and residential. So it's this idea that retail has shifted from functional, i.e. transactional and fulfillment, into experiential. And the workplace is doing the same thing, is shifting from functional workplace, functional work that's migrating to home or near home, to experience where we live the brand. And I think that happens at three levels, very much like retail. It happens at the store level or the office level in terms of the brand culture, in terms of sociability, in terms of idea sharing, content, programmed experience, the whole expression of the brand, the living of the brand that you work for, that participatory experience, all the stuff that we talk about in retail. So that's the office level. It happens at the building level, or if you like, the shopping center. So the building level, as Nicola mentioned, you know, long gone are the days that you're going to have a hermetically sealed office that turns its back to community. It needs to be permeable. It needs to have activated public spaces, programmed spaces. It needs to be 24/7, 360. No longer an office is dead on the weekends and in the evenings. It needs to be absolutely connected to community, and it needs to blur the physical and the digital. Again, very much like a shopping centre. And at the third level, which is the development level, the whole wider community level, again, this is again, how does a shopping centre connect to wider community? It's the same with the office in terms of creating not siloed mixed use, but blended use that blend office and retail and culture together. And thinking about how we fragment that workplace from just a building into a whole series of different components that create an ecosystem of work, including what we're referring to as the coffice, the coffee shop office, where, you know, a coffee shop or a retail space actually comes and can behave like an office. And what glues all this together, these three levels, all these experiences now, is wellness. Wellness is no longer a category. Wellness must be imbued in the DNA of all organizations, very much like sustainability. And I totally agree with Nicola. The new generation are going to turn to businesses and brands that are triple bottom line, that think about, yes, profit, but people and planet. And I think that is really, really critical.
Okay. Yeah. Fascinating kind of description of everything, and then and really making it very clear what the parallels between the retail and the office, which is great. I guess maybe just to wrap up, a question to both of you. I mean, I've had conversations with people who, you know, they kind of go, I can't wait to get back to the office. And I think, you know, would go back to the office that was the pre-pandemic office and be happy. I think there's businesses that, if they heard what you were saying, would go, well, that's all very well and it sounds great, but it's going to cost me, us as a business, a lot of money. You know, and if we look at retail, it's taken, I mean, we've seen the death of the so-called death of the high street and the emptying of the shopping centers. And some of that was happening pre-pandemic, and it's obviously got worse during the pandemic. Nicola, maybe I'll start with you. Do you see businesses taking this idea of purpose and brand and culture and community seriously? Or are many of them thinking that that's a bit, I don't quite know how to describe it, but I mean, I think if you have a conversation like that with people pre-pandemic, a lot of them say, well, that's a nice to have, but it's not really fundamentally important to my business. Both you and Ibrahim are saying it is fundamental to business now. So are you seeing that shift in real life, so to say?
Mm-hmm. I think in time, organizations will have no choice but to take this seriously because their employees have choice and they will make their choice, you know, with their feet and walk and work where they want to. I think certainly, you know, if there are some positives to be drawn from the COVID experience, I think it has without doubt, you know, pushed us forward at least 10 years, possibly even 20 in terms of, depending on the starting point, in terms of work and workplace. And arguably, it's also positively impacted on our collective sense of community, both locally and especially locally, but also internationally. So I think these are unstoppable trends that were coming anyway, but of course have been accelerated as a result of COVID. I think there are a number of blockers still in place. I think one of them is about budget allocation. We previously, budgets were very segmented, you know, shared out by departments. And what the shift is going to need to be is, you know, this is not a retail problem or a tech problem or a HR problem. It's a problem that needs to be addressed holistically across the whole organization. And looking and sharing those budgets is going to be key to unlocking that. So where, I mean, we know there was too much real estate, especially poor quality real estate before COVID. There's plenty of data around that. It's about rechanneling and right-sizing the real estate portfolio and then channeling some of those savings into things like technology platforms, community apps, etc. And probably the one that's still not well understood is the idea of needing a, you know, community manager or curator, as Ibrahim describes it, somebody who will bring together the experience of working in an organization. It's a little bit at a very kind of practical level. It's a little bit like a show caller in theater or on a film set, you know, somebody who brings together all the pieces and creates a holistic experience for employees that will keep them engaged.
And now back to you, Ibrahim, I guess for sort of the last word, are you optimistic that businesses understand that this shift kind of has to happen, as you've both been describing?
Yeah, it's interesting. Risk of sounding like a broken record, another analogy with retail. Retailers basically need less space. They don't need as many shops, and the shops they do have, they're going to need less space. They don't need place for storage. The experiences they put on will not need to be over 400 stores, you know. So what does that mean? Yes, they have to spend money on refurbishing their stores to create these great stage sets, technology, architecture, but they're going to have less of them to do. It's the same in offices. I think businesses will need less office space, and the space they will be left with, they would need to invest in. And there's no question that the millennial and, more importantly, centennial generation will turn their attention to employers who absolutely have a bigger purpose, who care about the role they play in the lives of their colleagues, their employees, and also in the wider planet. And like retail, it will come back down to data. Once we capture the data of the impact of those experiences, what we have to do, and this comes back to design, we have to design the environments to be data responsive. Whether that data is large sample quantitative, or whether it's very ethnographic and understanding, you know, what people's reactions are to those experiences, whatever the data is, however we get a response. And that's a lot of that is to do with how people share those experiences on social media. So how we do social media mapping and influencer mapping. Critically, once we capture all those data sets, is the environment fit for purpose? Can it be programmed and changed in response to that intelligence, that data? And that comes back down to the architecture. How do we design not just offices, but stage sets for working?
Fascinating. And I love this idea of stage sets. And I'm looking forward to seeing some of them being built and hopefully even working in one. So, and maybe we can have you both back at a future date to see how this does indeed unfold as we come out from lockdown. So Ibrahim and Nicola, thank you both for joining me. Fascinating conversation. Really appreciate your time and your thoughts and ideas. Good to have you with me.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Nicola.
Thank you both.